Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. Fellas, what a wild week of CFL action. Every game, all four, decided by one score or less, and it produced the highest rated television week of the season.
It was a great week. I was excited. I was jacked up, and I think a lot of our listeners are excited to hear us talk about it.
It can only get better from here. It's Labor Day, boys.
Hey, yo, and Hodge is coming to Regina.
I am. Looking forward to it. 6 hours in the car there, 6 hours back. Let's go.
Hey, today we're discussing reigning CFL most outstanding player, defensive player, that is, Matthew Betts, being released by the Detroit Motor City Lions.
Canadian quarterback Nathan Rourke improving, but not exactly lighting it up either in his second start with BC.
The ongoing debate about whether the Rouge should be eliminated.
Oh, don't say it, JC. The Blue Bombers honoring legendary running back Charles Roberts.
And the U Sports football season getting underway. But first,
the Toronto Argonauts beat the Saskatchewan Roughriders on a walk-off game-winning rouge in Week 12 as Liram Hirilahu missed a 40-yard field goal wide left and the kick sailed out the back of the end zone. The play made international news, including a spot on ESPN's ultra-popular Pardon the Interruption with Tony Kornheiser and Mike Wilbon. Should the CFL keep the rouge, ban it, or just tweak it?
Personally, I think the best suggestion I've heard, I think this came from Farhan Lalji. His suggestion is in the last 3 minutes of the game, you take away the point for the rouge, which I don't mind. I will say this, a huge pet peeve of mine is when people utter the phrase, well, in the CFL, you get a point for missing a field goal, because that is not true and has never been true ever, even one time. You get a point for kicking or punting the ball out the back of the end zone. That is what you get the point for. You do not get a point for missing a field goal. Sometimes those things happen on the same play, right? You miss a 13-yard field goal. It goes careening out the back of the end zone. That's a point. But you've never, ever, 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 ever gotten a point in the CFL for missing a field goal. It's for the ball going out the back of the end zone. Now, that's a separate conversation. Should you get a point for kicking the ball out the back of the end zone? I don't have a problem with the rouge. I also wouldn't be heartbroken if the rouge went away. But I do think that may be a good happy medium here of keeping the traditionalists happy, but also keeping the salty people happy who don't like seeing games end like this, is to change the rule in the last 3 minutes. I'll say this, if you subscribe to the concept that no, like there's no such thing as bad news, then this was a great game for the CFL. It got all kinds of international attention. I'll say this. I was laughing my butt off because I was on TikTok the other day, and an American like NFL personality who I follow was talking about this game, and I saw him talking about the CFL. I was like, wow, this is amazing.
Who
and
was
he starts
it?
Talking. I forget his name, to be honest. But he said the most hilarious thing. He's like, but it turns out the CFL has this thing called, and behind him on his screen, he had a screenshot of the CFL's rules. And he goes, they have this thing called the rogue. And when you score a rogue, you get a point. And he used the word rogue like 7 times. I was laughing uncontrollably. But again, I personally like the Rouge. I understand that some people don't. I think maybe, again, the happy medium is the best choice. But at the end of the day, I want to say this too. The better team won in this game. Okay. The Toronto Argonauts dominated the Saskatchewan Rough Riders for 108 yards of the field. Saskatchewan was really good within their first two. Up until that,
Argonauts, you watch the first 20 minutes of that football game?
I did, and then I watched the next
40. I don't
40.
Know if you're aware of this, Doug. Yeah, there's an extra
there's
40
actually
minutes
40
that.
Minutes that take place after. Sometimes there's extra.
They call that overtime. The Argos didn't dominate the entire game.
I didn't say they dominated the entire game. I said all in all, they dominated. They outgained Saskatchewan by 100 yards. Trevor Harris threw two terrible interceptions, putting Toronto immediately in scoring range. Full credit to Saskatchewan's incredible goal line defense. If you take those three stops away, this should have been a 20-point Toronto Argonauts victory. Is a game-winning Rouge a good story or a bad story? I don't know. But I will say, I don't think this was a case of a team that didn't deserve to win, getting the win because of fluke. I did think that the Argonauts deserved to win, even if the way that they won was maybe not as satisfying as some parties would like.
Everyone on this podcast knows I'm about as traditionalist goes when it comes to the CFL rulebook. But even I'm not entirely opposed to those suggested tweaks where the ball has to stay in the end zone or the returner has to be tackled in, particularly in the last 3 minutes, to prevent a situation like this. I don't think it's an urgent need to change it because this situation happens once every 3 or 4 years. It's not a regular occurrence where we get this bad publicity, but occasionally when it happens, everyone gets all up in arms. What I do want to point out, and you alluded to it a little bit, Hodge, is this is not a loser point. I don't like when people describe it as such because it's not as if the Toronto Argonauts got really close. They lined up for the field goal. Liram Hirelahu shanks it, and the league collectively gets together and goes, well, they really deserved it, though. Let's just give them one. Let's hand them this point for failure just because we feel
really bad.
The command
center has changed the outcome of one game this season. Okay, let's remember
okay.
that.
That's fair enough. At least one. But in this case, they're not doing that. There's not some collective sympathy for the Argos that awards them this victory. We have a scaling point scale, right? You score a touchdown, it's 6 points. You score a field goal, it's 3. You kick the ball out of the back of the end zone, it's 1. That's the way it always is throughout the entire game. That's the way it's always been. And if you want to prevent those points being scored, well, as a defense, you've got to prevent the offense from being in position to kick the ball through the back of the end zone and score the single point. That's your job.
In this instance, JC, manage the clock better.
Oh, absolutely. And you can get into that a little bit more, Doug, because they should not have been in this situation to begin with where they're having a Rouge kicked against them. But on a scaling point scale, if you want to say that the Rouge is a loser point, then a field goal is also a loser point because you failed to score a touchdown, right? That's the highest point total. If the lower point totals are loser points, then all of them are, right? There's nothing inherently better about a field goal than a Rouge. It's just a scaling point scale that rubs me the wrong way every time we talk about it.
You're the ultimate heel, JC. The ultimate heel with that field goal take, bro. Oh, my goodness. Okay. The Rouge, should it be tweaked? Yes, I can understand. But this has been in the game for years, all right? Boys, I know you hate when I do this, but I'll give you an example. back in my day, a long time ago, at the University of Guelph, okay?
Oh, boy.
We were in a football game, if my concussions will help me remember properly or not. Let me see if I can remember. Tied 36-36, all right? Home field advantage in the OUA quarterfinals on the line. Last game of the regular season, the scene, Alumni Stadium. Adam Archibald lines up, and I think it was a third down situation. My CTE might be getting the best of me. And we think, oh, man, like they're going to try to throw a Hail Mary to the end zone. No, 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 no. We were not ready. Kyle Walters, my head coach at the time. You should have coached us better, okay? He quick kicks it. It takes two or three big hops outside the back of the end zone. The Marauders celebrate. We were like the Riders wondering what the heck just happened. And they won the game on a rouge. It was a great coaching call from the McMaster Marauders to line up and do that. And we didn't really have any idea what was going on. Now, a week later, it should be said for the record, we got our revenge and beat them at Ivor Wynne on the way to hosting the 2007 Yates Cup, which was also the 100 Yates Cup. But point being, this has been in the game forever. Liram Hirilahu knew exactly what he was doing because he kicked that ball and he put his hand in the air right away and started running around and celebrating. And let's credit this guy, okay? I believe the end zones at BMO Field are not as long as they should be, but that is over a 60-yard kick in the air to get it out of bounds. All right, so I don't want to hear about this loser point. I don't want to hear it from Rider Nation, who all of a sudden wants to change the Rouge rule. Okay, because if the Riders would have won on a rouge, y'all would have been happy and excited and been praising the rouge rule. 110,000%. Okay, so let's just stop there. I don't even think it needs to be tweaked, because if we start tweaking the rule, boys, we might not get in a kick it in, kick it out situation at the end of the game. Like, this is what makes the CFL unique: strategy, game planning, field position. You earn the right to potentially get a point from field position. I can understand perhaps wanting to tweak it at the end of the game, but no, it's part of the game. You got to be ready for it. If this situation happens again, let's say you're the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Put Big Willie Jefferson at the back of the end zone to reject that ball back in bounds, kick it out of the end zone. How awesome would that be? That thing would go viral all over the internet. All right. I don't even think it should have got to the situation, potentially, where the Argos were able to kick a game-winning rouge. Because full credit to Bill Selness, the Canadian Football Hall of Fame media member, for questioning Corey Mace about this. And based on his reaction, I'm not so sure how this was thought through on the Riders' sideline, okay? You look at, according to the CFL play-by-play, whether or not we can trust it, 31 seconds were on the clock on 2nd and 17 after the Riders had called timeout. I don't care if it looked like Trevor Harris hit Kean Schaefer-Baker for a first down or not. It was a timeout, Riders fans. Okay, you need to understand that. So if you have a running play, let's say even a small gain on a running play is likely going to eat up 3 to 4 seconds off the clock. That gets us down to 27 seconds. We all know the play clock is about 20 seconds. There's probably a second in there for it to flip over. And with Adam Korsak and the way that he's able to kick the football in the return, there's a possibility that the game ends. There's also a possibility that there is a second left on the clock where Liram Hirilahu can line up for the potential game-winning field goal or the game-winning rouge. So that situation, to me, is the one that needs to be more magnified, because that was a major error for a team that has not won a game since July 19th.
I think that's well said, Dunk. And that is kind of the downside of when these very individual topics like the Rouge dominate conversation, is it takes away all of the extra added things. And not to harp on huge Rider losses, but that's a thought I've always had about the 2009 Grey Cup, right? The 13th man game. Everybody just focuses on that penalty at the end. And it's like, didn't this team get, I think it was zero first downs offensively in the last 6 minutes, and they gave up something like 17 points in the last 6 minutes? Like this was a complete and utter collapse by a team that, yes, culminated in an iconic final play, but unless they had struggled and failed for the previous you know, whatever it was, 30 plays, they wouldn't have found themselves in the situation to mess things up on the final play. And I agree wholeheartedly. This has become a conversation about the Rouge. It probably should be a greater conversation, at least in Ryderville, and I think it is now. But yeah, I think this is something the CFL should probably look at in the offseason. Is it something worth pulling your hair about and losing your mind about in the middle of August when you got all these other things going on, Labor Day coming up? In my opinion, no. Rider Nation might need to take just a little bit of a chill pill. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Little bit of a chill. Just take a half.
Drink a Pilsner.
Cut it in half.
Drink a pill.
Well, I don't want to.
Relax.
Talk to your doctor before combining drugs and alcohol. But take a little bit of a chill pill. If you want to have a Pilsner, have a Pilsner. It's all going to be okay. Riders are still going to make the playoffs. We're all going to be good. It's okay.
The Riders are in first place in the West Division. It's 5-5-1, but they're still in first place, which seems wild.
Hop in the time machine. Pull up in the DeLorean next to me. If you went back in time 12 weeks and said to Rider Nation, hey, you guys are going to be in first place on Labor Day, would they take it?
Absolutely.
100,000,000%. They'd be like, yes, for the love of God, anything but fifth. We'll go. We'll take it. Let's go. Playoff. Yes. Now, yeah, you're right. It is very tight. It's not first place in the traditional sense of first place, but who cares? First place is first place. You win this week. You got the season series on Winnipeg. You're in great shape.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today. If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices,
plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Detroit Lions released ranking CFL Most Outstanding Defensive Player Mathieu Betts as part of the team's final roster cuts on Tuesday. What's next for Betts? NFL or CFL?
That's the major question here for Mr. Betts. And I think we should remember here that as much as he had a great camp for the Detroit Lions, he's 29 years old. And in NFL terms, that is old. And I think it came down to, not I think, I know it came down to the wire in terms of the Detroit Lions deciding to keep him or not on the 53-man active roster. We saw Dan Campbell talk about Betts and praise him for what he did, at least early in training camp there with the Lions, but he was not able to unseat some of the more, let's say, seasoned American pass rushers he was competing against down there. So the also thing that I want to remember too is that the Cleveland Browns and Buffalo Bills were two other teams that worked him out. The Browns were one team that were really interested in his services. So let's see how waivers play out before CFL fans go crazy. We've already seen it, so it's too late. On Twitter, talking about their team offering a bunch of money to get this guy to go there.
The one thing I will say is I saw this yesterday when I reported that Dakota Shepley had been waived by the Dallas Cowboys, but that he was expected to join their practice roster. Same thing, Kyle Hergel getting cut by the New Orleans Saints, but if he cleared waivers, expected to join the practice roster. First of all, this is a good reminder for everybody. Please read news articles. Don't just react to headlines. Please read the articles. I know that I am sometimes guilty of jumping at a headline, be it sports related or not, and going, why? And then it's like, wait, hold on, maybe I should read this article. Then you read the article and it's like, okay, there is lots of context here that is important to understanding why this headline is written the way that it is. And it's important to get that. And I know that some people want that information spoon-fed on Twitter, or they want headlines to have all the pertinent information. Well, headlines can't be 300 words long. Those are called articles. So please read the articles. Nathan Rourke kind of threw a big old wrench into this narrative that we should maybe have patience in the CFL for guys coming back. Because Nathan Rourke literally picked up his football and went home to the BC Lions after getting cut by the Atlanta Falcons and clearing waivers. So maybe if Nathan Rourke is back in the CFL, I would have thought Mathieu Betts would be back in the CFL way before Nathan Rourke. So if Nathan Rourke's already here, I don't think it's crazy to suggest that Mathieu Betts will be. And there are 9 CFL teams who could use an upgrade to their pass rush right now. This is a wild stat. I looked this up this morning. Micah Johnson, at the ripe age of 36, is leading the league in sacks, but he is only on pace for 9.8 sacks this year. There are currently 0 players on pace to hit double-digit sacks in the CFL this year. And of the guys who have more than 4, you've got Mustafa Johnson, Jake Serezna, Noah Curtis, and Michael Wakefield on top of Micah Johnson, all of whom have something in common. What is that?
Defensive tackles.
They're all interior guys. Now I understand with rotation and rep, like Noah Curtis kind of plays on the edge a little bit. Jake Serezda plays on the edge. But like, for all intents and purposes, these are interior guys. Sione Tehema and Willie Jefferson are the only 2 edges with 5-plus sacks so far this season. Sack numbers are down, which is interesting because sometimes you see some people float that CFL offensive lines are terrible and we need to get rid of the ratios that we can play American offensive linemen because Canadian offensive linemen suck. I don't know. Last I checked, sack numbers in the CFL are way down this year and offensive lines look pretty good. I think part of that, this is my speculation, I think part of that might be that officials are being a little bit more lenient when it comes to holding. That might be part of the equation. But CFL offensive lines, I think, are playing pretty well right now. And teams desperately need edge help. I think basically Saskatchewan's probably in the best situation with Malik Kearney, right, who's had a big season playing off the edge. Brian Cox is very versatile for them. you know, Ottawa's probably in good shape. Bryce Carter and Lorenzo Malden are playing well. But really, those two teams could use Mathieu Betts, and the other seven teams could certainly use Mathieu Betts. I think Montreal would have been in a great position with Sean Lemon coming back, but as we know, we'll talk about later on in the show, that doesn't appear to ever be happening now. So I think certainly Mathieu Betts will be a highly coveted player north of the border. And unlike previous years where you might be, you know, stuck under the cap and, well, we don't know how we're going to pay this guy. Well, now you can just give him as much marketing money as you want and it's fine. So it might be easier for teams relative to previous years to actually get him under a big money contract.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Hodge, because that's the other thing that Nathan Rourke proved in coming back, is that you can circumvent the cap a little bit right now with that marketing money, put a bunch into that in terms of a discounted prorated contract with marketing money up front. Doesn't have to be for more than a year. In this case, Betts can get his big free agency bag in the offseason if he wants, but you get the marketing money, which is off the cap. And then if he signs with a contender, then he can get that playoff money, which is off the cap, which we all know is all important in these situations where guys are coming back to the CFL from the NFL. That playoff money can be significant if you get on a team that's going to go all the way to the Grey Cup. For Betts, I know that he loved his time in BC. I think if it's possible, that's somewhere he would lean. But there's going to be lots of interest and lots of money out there for him. And it remains to be seen whether BC is the best option, right? They could certainly use him. I think he would change their defense dramatically. They have next to no pass rush right now, and their secondary is getting destroyed as a result. But you could say the same thing about a number of teams, and just about everybody, with possibly the exception, I think, of the Ottawa Redblacks, who have both Carter and Malden there as legit elite pass rushers, would benefit from bringing in Betts.
Let's just look at the NFL angle of this for a second, guys, because there's a lot of CFL fans that say, well, the NFL doesn't respect the CFL. And I think that's true in a lot of cases. But essentially, Betts was competing for this defensive end edge roster spot with James Houston. It seems to me that's what it came down to. That's a guy who is 25 years old, was a sixth round draft pick. We all know how draft picks trump undrafted free agents, but he was a late round pick. He's got 8 sacks in his NFL career. So he's 4 years younger and more proven at the NFL level. Does Betts, perhaps in a vacuum, deserve a shot against this guy? Yeah, but we're talking about a ultra competitive situation. I do think, by all accounts from people I've talked to, that Betts had a great training camp and preseason with the Lions. You saw the clip. If you haven't seen it, it's on my Twitter at JDunk12 of him absolutely swimming an offensive tackle on Kansas City and blowing up Carson Wentz. JC, I think you tweeted it as well, and it went semi-viral, we'll call it, by our standards. So I think that added perspective needs to be remembered, and also the fact that he didn't have any guaranteed money in his contract. So as much as he's been great in the CFL, especially that year in 2023, he's 29. The fact he got a shot down there, I think, shows that the Detroit Lions at least respect the CFL level of play, and he took it to the absolute limit. Is there a chance for him to get on a practice roster with the Lions? It's possible, but that seems like a very outside chance. I don't expect that to happen. Is there a possibility that he gets picked up on waivers by another NFL team? There's always a chance. Is there a possibility that he waits this out before coming back to the CFL? There's a chance there too. He's going to weigh his options with his agent, Sasha Govami. They always play things very smartly. And I think that there is one team that he is definitely not going to in the Canadian Football League, fellas. Can we all agree? There is no chance he signs with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I know they were supposedly keeping money aside for him, but why would he go into that situation right now? If I'm Mathieu Betts, and let's look at it from this perspective, okay, fellas, we can role play here a little bit. We don't all look like we should be accountants, but are actually football players. That said, If I'm Matthew Betts, I'm either going to the BC Lions because I know that system and I'm comfortable there and there's a chance to win a Grey Cup at home with that franchise, or I'm going to the Montreal Alouettes. Mm-hmm. Let's just be honest about it, okay? JC, you laid it out well, especially with the Ottawa Redblacks there. You know, I don't think the Toronto Argonauts are going to break the bank for the guy. That said, you know, sometimes they do things to surprise you. They have Jake Ceresna and Flo Ormelade there. Winnipeg could certainly use the help. I don't want to go around all the teams. I think for Betts, from my perspective, I'm saying if I was him, this is not based on any facts or background research. Those are the two teams I'm looking at because I want to win. And also those owners have shown that they will pay. You don't think Pierre-Carl Peladeau would pay a bunch of marketing money to a Quebecer to come back there and help the Alouettes get a second straight Grey Cup? I'm pretty sure he would.
It's a good point.
We have reached arguably the best week of the CFL regular season as Labor Day is upon us. The new year features the same classic rivalry matchups, Winnipeg and Saskatchewan, Toronto and Hamilton, and Edmonton and Calgary, with the added excitement of Touchdown Pacific in Victoria, BC. JC going to hop on that ferry, get out there and cover it live for Three Down Nation. Which matchup are you most looking forward to and why? And if you say Winnipeg, Hodge, and JC, if you say BC, you're a homer, okay? You're freaking homers.
Well, I'm not going to say Winnipeg. I'm going to say Winnipeg and Saskatchewan, which is different because that is objectively the right answer. This is a matchup of teams that are currently first and second in the West Division. And yes, you can roll your eyes if you want to, because the records are 5-5-1 and 5-6 respectively. But this is a first and second place matchup. This is a sold out game. It's the only game that's sold out so far on Labor Day weekend, aside from Touchdown Pacific, which is at a small building. And this is the best rivalry in the CFL. It is, bar none. The Hamilton Tiger Cats, if you haven't noticed, stink. They are not going to make the playoffs. The Toronto Argonauts have been kicking them to the curb for years now. And in the Battle of Alberta, Edmonton has played.
Hodge, hold up. Who have the Tiger Cats beat in one of their two wins this season?
Well, their two wins have come against Toronto and Edmonton. Fair enough. One game.
And it's Labor Day, buddy, in the hammer. Anything can happen. I'm not saying I would pick the Ticats. I'm just bouncing
That was my next question. You picking the Tabbies? You picking the Tabbies this week? I see you shaking. And yes, anything can happen. They did win. If I remember correctly, there was a special teams touchdown and a defensive touchdown in that game for the Ticats, and they still won by 3 points. But whatever. You're right. The Tabbies have beaten the Argonauts this year. I'm talking more on a macro level since 2019.
I feel you.
Which team has been better? The Toronto Argonauts have been head and shoulders better. By the way, shout out Scott Milanovic.
Head and shoulders, knees and toes.
Shout out Scott Milanovic, who opined to the media yesterday saying, I think the quote was, we need to run the ball better. And he said that after benching James Butler for two games, which I thought was wild cognitive dissonance. Like you bench your 1,000-yard guy and you're like, well, we got to run the ball better. It's like, I don't know, Scott, you know a lot more about football than me, but I feel like there's a solution to both of these problems. And the Battle of Alberta, I mean, let's just be frank. Neither of these teams have been very exciting to watch this year, except for when Trey Ford has been on the field for the Edmonton Elks. Now, he could be back this week, which would be very exciting, but we don't know that yet. So to me, the answer is the sold-out game that's going to draw the biggest television audience. We already know which one's going to draw the biggest television audience, and that is Winnipeg at Saskatchewan, battle of two top teams in the West Division, albeit a beleaguered West Division. That is the most exciting game. And the other thing I want to say, because every year Labor Day comes around, there are a couple of Goombas sitting there in Southern Ontario or Alberta. They're like, oh, yeah, that Labor Day classic. That's not even on Labor Day. Okay, yes, the Prairie game takes place on Sunday. And if you are of the opinion that you can't call it a Labor Day classic if it's not literally on Labor Day, then I want to share this with you. You are not allowed to celebrate any holiday unless it's on the actual day. Like if you get invited,
it's the freaking weekend, okay? Labor Day weekend.
If you get invited to a Halloween party, well, mind you, if you're this obnoxious, there's no way you're getting invited to parties. But if you were to hypothetically be invited to a Halloween party and Halloween's on a Monday and it's like, well, we're having it on December 29th because, you know, no one wants to party on a Monday. You're not allowed to go. You're not allowed to go because you have to. Apparently, you can only do things on the actual day. You can't party the Saturday before Halloween. You got to party on Monday by yourself.
Hodge, you are bang on with both that take and your selection for the most interesting game this weekend. It's without question Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, for all the reasons that you laid out. But because those other two games just don't have the same amount of juice, I'm going to have to be a homer dunk because he stole the other option. Because
no, bro, you can agree with him.
You can just agree.
Yes.
No. That doesn't make for interesting content. I have to talk about Nathan. You want me to stop talking about a Canadian quarterback dunk? I just want to get that on the record.
I never said that.
That's what I thought. The second most interesting game of the week is Touchdown Pacific because of all of the narratives, right? The BC Lions are a five-game losing skid. Nathan Rourke is struggling, I think it's fair to say. He was better last week than he was in his debut, but still not up to the standard I believe he holds himself to. And all of a sudden, he's got this game in the city where he was born, in the city where the man paying him all the money in Amar Doman was born, in front of a group of fans that don't always get to enjoy BC Lions football, but are ravenous for it, a sold-out crowd out there in Victoria. It has all the makings of a game that could either shift the BC Lions season for the positive, Nathan Rourke's rebirth in his birthplace. He goes off for big numbers, gets a victory over the Ottawa Redblacks, and all of a sudden the Lions are cooking again. Or if he continues to struggle and Vernon Adams Jr. will be back in the lineup this week in a backup capacity, all of a sudden those murmurs, those questions about, okay, who should really be starting for this team, they begin to pick up. And perhaps there's a conversation in that BC Lions locker room or in that with that coaching staff about putting VA back on the field and sitting Nathan Rourke on the bench. So this is a pivotal game for all of those narratives, in my opinion, which makes it fascinating to watch.
Rick Campbell out here disrespecting my boy Nathan Rourke, okay? Let him work through this. The man has had how many playbooks in his head from the NFL, been with how many teams over the last calendar year, and he's two starts in, and you're about to pay him $750,000 next year, and you're like, we might start for a nut. Get out of here with that trash, okay, Rick Campbell? Come on, man. Let him work through it, all right? The most intriguing matchup of Labor Day weekend. Yes, it's a weekend. It's a freaking weekend, baby. Just have me some fun, okay? Is the Bombers at the Riders? It usually has been, and in future years, it usually will be, all right? It is the game, the only game during the regular season that gets close to garnering 1 million average television viewers, okay? I know people are going away and talking about, I want to see the streaming numbers. Last year, Labor Day Classic, 975,000 average viewers, okay? It is the game that the non-crazy Riders and Bombers fan knows is on the schedule. Always on the Sunday, always on Labor Day weekend. And yes, you can still call it the Labor Day Classic. I'll agree, JC, the second most interesting storyline is Nathan Rourke. But let him work through this, man. Why do we got to be out here even talking about him potentially taking a backseat to Vernon Adams Jr.? Like, man, well, come on. You want to talk about focus, mental preparation, being with your guys? Like, what are we doing here?
There are five reasons why Nathan Rourke should be potentially a backup when Vernon Adams Jr. comes back. And that is interception number one, interception number two, interception number three, fumble number four, and fumble number five. Five turnovers in two games and two losses in two games. We were going to talk about this later in the show, but I'll just throw in my two cents now. I'm of the opinion that if Nathan Rourke doesn't play really well this week, that the Lions should go back to VA when he's healthy. And here's the beauty of this decision by Rick Campbell that he gets to make is, first of all, they're two good options. And second of all, you don't have to declare for life which quarterback you're playing. It could just be a week to week thing, which actually can be an advantage as a game planning tool, right?
Nah.
If you're a defense and you don't know if you're getting VA or Nathan up until the week of, or heck, you could bounce between them in a game, I think that that adds another dimension to that offense potentially, because as we've seen, Nathan Rourke, who I still think will get back to his 2022 form at some point, I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback now. I think he's going to be a great quarterback again in the future. But right now, right, he was terrible game one and he was mediocre at best game two. Now it's possible that growth trajectory will continue and he's going to be fabulous in 2-3 weeks. But it's also possible that he's not. And the Lions, given their 5-game skid that JC talked about, don't have the time to wait around and find out. Nathan Rourke is the future. There's no reason why Vernon Adams Jr. can't be the right now.
Well, there's one other thing you can do to help with the game planning and opening up things for Nathan Rourke. It's that he needs to run more, guys. And I feel like I'm screaming into the void because I was saying this back in 2022, too. And I understand at that point, Nathan was trying to force himself to be more of a pocket passer and not use his legs as a crutch. But as I wrote in my post-game column this week, crutches are for the sick and the lame. And the BC Lions are both right now. So let's use our legs more here. And when you've got Vernon Adams Jr. sitting in the wings, and I understand that from a personal standpoint, obviously Nathan doesn't ever want to get hurt. And nobody wants that for Nathan. But from a team perspective, it's not as much of a risk when your elite quarterback is running when you've got a second elite quarterback sitting behind him. So let's allow Nathan to do what he does best. We saw that 51-yard run last week. He doesn't have to make it to his fifth or sixth read. He doesn't have to be sitting there in the pocket with that terrible protection in front of him, running for his life and getting stripped. If he doesn't see it on read 1, 2, or 3, take off. Go get 8 yards, get 10 yards, get 5 yards, whatever it is, slide, protect yourself. But he's got to use his legs a little bit more, in my opinion, as he begins to work through this.
And by the way, that argument works in reverse too. If VA is your starter and you got a healthy Nathan Rourke on the bench, VA, please, for love, run all you want. Obviously, yes, you don't want somebody to get hurt, but if that can open up another dimension, right, that offense can be much better because that offense has been putrid the last month after being the league's best through the first 6 weeks of the season. So, yes, take the reins off the quarterbacks. Most teams in the CFL are completely and utterly pooched if their quarterback gets hurt. BC,
I'll say,
what an advantage that would be to have two guys who can play.
If you're going to start Vernon Adams Jr., then in my humble opinion, he has to be better from the pocket because when that offense, JC, correct me if I'm wrong, was at its best early in season, it was when Vernon Adams Jr. was making mostly off-schedule plays. I'm not saying he can't win from the pocket, but he needs to do it more consistently if he's going to start. Nathan Rourke has got to do that more consistently as well, but it's concerning to me that this losing skid started and the offense has bogged down before Nathan Rourke got here. I know part of that was due to VA's injury, but I do think that the offense has to be better overall, protecting the quarterback. And Rourke needs some time to develop a rapport with a bunch of different targets that he hasn't played a long time with outside of Keon Hadjer.
Well, and
the struggle of why this offense started to decline, it's 2 weeks prior to VA's injury in that Calgary game, the start of this losing skid when he had his worst numbers of the season and then somehow was even worse against Winnipeg in that shutout. It's teams found the recipe for defeating the Lions. It's that, well, they were getting the ball out of VA's hands quickly. It was simple reads. He could extend plays from the pocket, but the line's not good enough. So if you just rush three, they're going to get there eventually. And you take away everything in coverage by dropping everybody else back, and you just let him cook in there until he begins to struggle. And you can do it with three rushers, you can do it with four, but you don't have to blitz the BC Lions at all to get home because they don't have the protection to stand up against it. And that's remained true even with Nathan Rourke at the helm. He can't beat a blitzer and get those big plays because nobody's blitzing him right now because they don't have to, because you've got Cleon Lang coming up the middle, splitting guys like the Red Sea because they can't handle him, because you're not able to run Lorenzo Maldon around the hoop or Michael Wakefield around the hoop, and he can reach in and get a strip sack. Like, those are the things that the BC Lions can't do right now. It's because they haven't addressed that offensive line in the last 4 years. They're still the worst unit in the CFL, and unless you're making incredible plays from the quarterback position, which VA was making at the start of the year and Nathan has been known to make at times, then you're going to struggle to be able to generate anything down the field when teams are solid in coverage and they're getting home with minimal rushers.
And while we're throwing the offensive line under the bus in BC, let's also talk about Alexander Hollins, who got paid like a true number one receiver and looked sensational for a month, and now appears to have frying pans for hands, and it is not separating, is not catching balls. Like, if you're going to be a diva and be disrespectful to the media, the least you could do is catch the ball when it's thrown right at you. And right now, Alexander Hollins is not doing that enough. Is he going to get it back? I think he will. I think Alexander Hollins is a very talented player, but you wouldn't know it from the last month or so. He's got to be better regardless of who's throwing the ball.
You know, Hud, you bring up a great point, because I found this a little bit in the CFL with some of the athletes that they're great when it's going well. Okay. But when it starts to go the other way, and not even difficult questions get asked, but just rudimentary sports journalism kind of questions get asked of these guys, they bristle, they get all upset. If you perform and you win and you catch footballs, Alex Hollins, you will not get asked these questions. You control the narrative. Don't make it about the media, okay? When you get paid, what is he getting paid? $200,000-ish?
I think it's like $230,000.
When you get upper tier CFL money, this is what happens. You are held more accountable than being on a rookie contract. So I don't want to hear it, because I've seen this too many times. You are a professional athlete. Heaven forbid you were in, I don't even want to say this, but the NFL. You would have questions daily. Could you imagine any NFL team being on this kind of a losing streak? How relentless the media would be? How relentless the fans would be? And I don't even want to compare it to the NFL. I should say this just as in this setting in the Canadian Football League. Suck it up, go out there, catch the football, make plays, and win, because you control the narrative. Enough of this BS. I'm sick of it. And I think it kind of goes back to Chad Kelly, where he didn't like answering questions about a lawsuit that was filed against him. These are your actions, okay? In this instance, Alex Hollins, catch the football. Or yeah, Hodge is going to refer to you as the man with frying pan hands. Catch the football, dude. The tape don't lie, okay? And we can watch the tape too and form our own opinions. I'm sick of it. I'm so sick of this. With these players sometimes in our league that are so soft, with the coaches and personnel people in our league that are so soft, it's professional football. You get paid to win. If you do not win, there will be fair questions asked. Keyword fair. Be ready to answer them as a professional, because I don't want to hear the cliche anymore that coaches and personnel and players talk about, you know, so-and-so is a true pro, okay? I don't want to hear it. Act like it. Your actions speak louder than words.
Hollins making 223.8 in hard money this year. Maximum value of 234.8. That's a lot of money. He's fifth highest paid receiver in the CFL. Highest paid on his team. And when he's dropping passes and then, oh, he finally reels one into the fourth quarter when they're down by 20 and he goes berserk. Yeah, it's not a good look. Like, be a vet. You're an ultra talented player. Why are you acting surprised that you caught the ball?
You know what? That reminds me. My brother's wife's mother said, why do guys get so excited for doing their job? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're a receiver. Catch the football. You play basketball. She talks about it. Make the shots. I understand there are moments and stuff, there are crazy plays, and we should be excited. But her approach, it just spoke volumes to me. It's something I'll
never forget. There's a Guelph alumnus, Dunk, who's really bad for that, whose team has not won a lot of games this year. I'm not going to mention any names, but maybe you should talk to your former Griffin there about celebrating 12-yard catches when he's down 20.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Allo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
NFL Cutdown Day has come and gone, with six first-year Canadian and former CFL players making 53-man active rosters. This is just first-year guys. We're not talking about guys like Alex Singleton or David Onyemata, who've been down there for a long time. They are offensive lineman Isaiah Adams with the Cardinals, tight end Theo Johnson with the Giants, offensive lineman Giovanni Manu with the Lions, Tyreek McAllister with the Raiders, tight end Tanner McLaughlin with the Cards, and Quantez Stiggers with the Jets. Of those six, JC, who do you expect to have the best season?
Well, there's a number of them that could contribute early in their careers. Isaiah Adams, Theo Johnson come to mind as guys who may start for stretches of their rookie season. But Quantez Stiggers is the one that I will be watching, because there is an opportunity for him, not necessarily a start as a boundary corner, but he could be in line to get a lot of nickel and dime reps early on and potentially step into a larger role if injuries occur in that Jets secondary. They really like him. That's why they spent that fourth round pick on him. He had a good training camp by all accounts. He's going to be a high level NFL player, in my opinion. And the way he talks and the way he gels with that group, we talked about it a couple weeks ago when he was lipping off about the Madden ratings. He's just got the confidence that you need to excel at that level. I think he's going to be a real gem for the Jets and somebody who's going to make some plays for them in that secondary.
If the New York Giants quarterback situation wasn't such a mess, I would say Theo Johnson, because this guy is an athletic freak, a lot of upside. The Giants love him. but I just can't trust Daniel Jones, man. So it should be Theo Johnson, I guess, is my answer. Giants, figure out your quarterback situation. Maybe bring back Nathan Rourke, okay?
Given the way he's played the last 2 weeks, I don't think that they're going to bring back Nathan Rourke. But I agree that they've handled their quarterback situation terribly. I'm going to go off the board here a little bit, and I'm going to say it for selfish fanboy reasons.
Hodge going OTB.
I am tacitly a Raiders fan. I don't cover the NFL.
The Raiders.
So I do have a team. I don't invest a lot of time or energy into them until the CFL season is done. And for the last many, many years, that has meant that I don't pay attention at all because they've been out of playoff contention by the time the CFL season is done in the middle of November. So,
but bro, how do you like watching Max Crosby play football, though? Come on.
I mean, Max Crosby is an unbelievable beast. Unfortunately, unfortunately, he is the equivalent of a Lamborghini parked outside of an outhouse right now with the Raiders because he is so incredible.
How many times can I say it until you guys get annoyed and tell me to shut up?
Well, I was going
to Raiders.
I was going to ignore it, but apparently that didn't work. So yes, please stop. You out here saying Raiders like Alexander Hall is dropping passes, but I am looking forward to seeing Tyreek McAllister, former CFL player, because I do always love watching former CFL players in the NFL. I'm looking forward to him hopefully making many big plays for the Raiders. I don't expect the Raiders to make the playoffs this year, but I'm hoping they're at least still in contention for a spot when the CFL season ends in the middle of November, and I can actually start paying close attention to what the Raiders are doing.
Yeah, I think there's a real opportunity for McAllister to do something with the Raiders as a returner, right? And I don't think if you looked at the list of CFL guys...
Did you say the Raiders?
I'm going to edit
Las Vegas out. With Las Vegas. We're going to cut that name out of the podcast from here on out. But if you looked at the list of guys that signed from the CFL to the NFL this offseason, Tyreek McAllister, as good as he was as a rookie, led the league in return yards, but I don't think he had a return touchdown, was probably at the bottom of your list in terms of size of name, guys people were rooting for. But here he is. He's on the 53-man roster, had a big last week with two touchdowns, one punt return, one receiving touchdown in the preseason finale for Las Vegas. And with the new kickoff rules in the NFL, if he's back there, there's going to be some opportunities for him to get some space as a former running back who can read and has that vision to be able to find a gap in that kickoff team. And as a punt returner, we know what he's capable of as well. So he could really exceed people's expectations and carve himself out a nice little niche there in the desert.
He had one touchdown, it looks like.
Two touchdowns.
Missed
two.
Field goal return.
Two.
And a catch. And a catch. He's playing more receiver than running back.
He's talking about CFL. Missed
field
goal
CFL. Return. Yeah. In the CFL, field goal return. That's true.
And he had a couple on offense, I believe, or one on offense. He took that long pass down the sideline.
He's a great
Does
player.
Does he have a return touchdown this year with the Raiders?
Let's move on.
You didn't answer the question. You guys hyping this guy up. You don't think he's going to have one?
Well, there are no return touchdowns in the NFL anymore. They never return anything.
He had one in the preseason.
Yeah, preseason. Preseason.
Okay.
I think he'll have one. I think he'll have one.
Maybe.
I'll go on the record. The U Sports conferences hit the field this past weekend with Canada West set to join them this upcoming week. Dunk, who is your pick to win the Heck Crichton Trophy, which is awarded annually to the top player in the country?
You know, before I get to my pick here, shout out University of Guelph, shout out McMaster University for a great OUA Saturday of football, okay? The Griffins and
the Griffins!
The Griffins!
The Marauders!
Griffins! Can I tell you my favorite Griffin training camp story?
Can you do it very quickly because we're running out of time?
I'm just joking. I'll move on. Keep it moving.
That's a tease for next podcast. We'll
do it next
off
week.
The top with
we'll
Dunk's
do it next week.
Favorite training camp story.
Good call. Shout out to both of those schools for hosting me, you know, from a media standpoint, but also to having competitive football games with honestly solid crowds. Like McMaster, 7 p.m. kickoff, over 5,000 fans in the stadium. From what I could see, it was jam-packed at Ron Joyce Stadium. And shout out to Mark Soria for getting his first win as a head coach in U Sports with the University of Guelph. Got the Gatorade bath, was soaking wet, talked to the team afterwards. Arguably my favorite player to watch on the Griffins right now is number one, Marshall McCray. He had a great day, passing touchdown, rushing touchdown. And excuse me, I got this terrible cough I'm trying to battle here. But the reason I wanted to go to Hamilton, with all due respect to the Marauders, is to watch Taylor Elgersma, which everybody in Canada and who is a football fan should do this season. But in particular, the people who are in Canada, in Ontario, that have the chance to watch this guy live, because he has, dare I say, the most impressive arm talent that I have ever seen at the U Sports level. I don't want to succumb to recency bias here, because I've stood behind Michael O'Connor a number of times and seen him in games. You know, I didn't play against him, but I saw Tommy Dennison film. He had a really strong arm. So it's definitely up there. So I'll just speak from my time covering U Sports as a reporter. I believe he has the most special arm talent I've seen from a U Sports quarterback. And geez, look no further than the clip that I have on my Twitter account at JDunk12 of a sideline throw that he even dared to try to make against McMaster. The ball absolutely zipped out of his hand on that throw, and on a number of other completions and even incompletions, this guy's throwing it into windows that I've rarely seen U Sports quarterbacks try to do. Yes, McMaster played a lot of coverage against him. Finally, the Golden Hawks realized it, ran the football with Tanner Nelms. He had over 100 yards in that game. I believe he's a Montreal Alouettes draft pick that was in training camp with them. Had a fine outing. So for me, it's obvious my pick to win the heck is Taylor Elgersma, but he's going to have to live up to the hype. It's one thing to do it when you're an up-and-comer. He was the OUA MVP in 2023 after that season, led the country in a number of major statistical passing categories. But now everybody's gaming for you. They're looking at you. The expectations are there. There is interest from south of the border. There's interest from north of the border in him. And he looks legit, man. This guy is a physical beast from that standpoint. I think he's all of 6'6". I believe I asked him what his actual height was. He's filled out. He looks legit. The ball off his hand is unbelievable. But you actually got to go now and play football to earn some of those opportunities in the pros.
Well, if you're a CFL fan, you don't care about U Sports. Well, Taylor Elgersma is draft eligible next year. I believe he will be drafted by a CFL team. And as Dunk said, it's possible there might even be NFL interest, right? There's not many 6'6", 220-pound passers out there. However, my pick to win the Heck Crichton Trophy this year is a repeat winner. That would be Jonathan Senecal of the Montreal Caribbean. That one doesn't work
Le
as well.
Le Caribbean.
Yeah, that works okay. He won the Vanier Cup last year. He won Vanier Cup MVP. He won U Sports Male Athlete of the Year. He won the Heck Crichton Trophy. And he was a first-team All-Canadian. It was as much of a sweep as you could have. And I don't think that Senecal is as good of a pro prospect as Elgersma, because he is smaller. He's a little bit older. I think he's already 25, but he'd be 26. I can't remember. But regardless, he is a sensational playmaker for the Caribbean. He had 3 touchdown passes in their season opening win over the Sherbrooke Varior. And I also think outside of the Laval games, RSEQ football, you're going to have a little bit of a softer schedule than the OUA, which, aside from a few teams that have really struggled the last few years, has a little bit more consistency to it. So I'm going to take Senecal to win the Heck Crichton, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if Elgersma did do enough with the Golden Hawks to take it.
Yeah, I think you guys have identified what is really the two-horse race for the crown this year, and frankly, I thought Elgersma should have won it last year over Senecal, but Senecal,
Elgersma.
What did I say? Elgersma.
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 Elgersma. Elgersma should have won it last year over Senecal, but I think Senecal got a little bit of a bump because his team was, of course, the most dominant in the country. And also, he can do a little bit more with his legs than Elgersma can. He's a little bit more mobile. That adds some stats to his resume. But lest we not just talk about quarterbacks, let's not forget that some of the top rushers in the country last year are back this year in U Sports. Jared Cesari at Queens, he's back. Matthew Peterson at Alberta, he's back. And I'll even throw in Isaiah Knight at UBC. All of those guys.
He might be the most talented back in the country, my man. Isaiah Knight is getting interest already from NFL teams. Okay.
And
call it the Giomanu effect, call it the Theo Benedett effect. Sorry, JC, but Isaiah Knight is a bona fide, legit back in this country. He needs the numbers to perhaps back it up from a star power potential. But man, this kid is a beast.
Yeah, I was at the UBC Junior Day shortly after their pro day for Manu and Theo Benedett. And Knight is a beast. Like, he is built. So I expect those three all to be in contention with some impressive rushing numbers. Don't forget about the running backs when it comes to university football. So many teams rely on them heavily.
So time for Hodge's Heritage Moment. On this day in 2017, the Hamilton Tiger Cats announced the hiring of disgraced college coach Art Briles. The Texas native had been fired by Baylor University only 1 year prior after an independent investigation found that he failed to properly handle reports of sexual violence being committed by players on his team. Following considerable blowback from fans, sponsors, and members of the media, the Tiger Cats owner, Bob Young, called the hiring a, quote, major blunder later that day and credited league commissioner Randy Ambrosi for helping convince the team to reverse course. Briles has since coached 2 seasons at the high school level as well as stints in Italy. Dunk, is this the stupidest thing any CFL team has ever tried to do?
It might be the stupidest thing the Tiger Cats tried to do, and I can't believe they even thought that this was some sort of a good idea in the first place. And, you know, it's great for Bob Young to say that after the fact, but I'm sure there had to be discussion, or there should have been, I should say, discussion behind the scenes with Randy Ambrosi or others in the league. And they probably got that feedback. And I think they thought, no, this PR thing, it'll blow over, or it won't follow him across the border. Terrible decision. Absolutely horrid. And it shows how quickly they reverse course.
Yeah, it was an absolutely horrific hire. Glad it was reversed quickly. But in terms of dumbest things that have ever happened to the CFL, there's a long list of pretty good contenders. I mean, the Toronto Argonauts wanted to host like wet t-shirt contests in the late 90s. So let's not forget about that. There's a lot of bad decision making from
that CFL sounds owners. Like an off-season series for Mr. JC Abbott.
Oh, that would be a great series. Dumbest things CFL teams have ever done. Letting JC into the locker room probably cracks that top 10.
Yeah, probably.
It's now time for the three-minute drill.
Let's keep it moving, boys. The CFL Command Center has undergone a shift, refocusing on overturning only calls that are clear and obvious. Let's see if they stick to it. It will also stop creating new late-game penalties, which used to be one of its responsibilities. Hodge, are you actually convinced the Command Center is going to stick to this?
I hope they do. I wrote a whole column saying what they should do. The challenge or the changes that they made basically fit that column. I think this is smart. Just keep it consistent, please. Reigning winner Elik Eamonner made the watch list for the John Cornish Trophy, which is awarded annually to the top Canadian football player in the NCAA. Do you think the Stanford receiver will repeat?
I think there's a strong possibility he's going to be a 1,000-yard guy if he stays healthy again for Stanford, potentially even someone who could come out early in the NFL draft. But he's going to have competition from quarterback Curtis Rourke at Indiana, who's getting great praise in training camp ahead of his first season. And the dark horse that not enough people are talking about, defensive end Akeem Mesidor at Miami. He was hurt all of last year, but this is a guy who used to be a freshman All-American. He's probably going to be the first Canadian off the board in the NFL draft this year. If he has a big season for what could be an ACC champ team and a potential playoff contender, that's going to put him in the mix. The Alouettes wore their retro uniforms this past week to honor the 1974 Grey Cup team. Which look is better, Montreal's current uniforms or their retros?
It's the retros. One sentence, JC, that's how it's done. An independent arbitrator upheld the indefinite suspension levied against Montreal Alouettes defender Sean Lemon for betting on games. Was that the right call?
Yes, it was the right call. Don't bet on your games. It's pretty simple. Don't bet on your games. Former CFL assistant coach John DeLisandres passed away at the age of 70. Is that a big loss?
It was a shocking loss. Obviously, didn't spend much time in the CFL, just a year in Ottawa and a year in Memphis, but rose very highly in the NFL ranks and was greatly respected. The Toronto Argonauts honored equipment manager Danny Webb for 40 years of service. Dunk, what does a guy like Webb mean to a CFL team?
Those equipment guys, man, they can be so critical behind the scenes, not often talked about. But the fact that they can always be there for the players' needs is paramount, because look good, feel good, play good. Bernie Gleiberman, who owned the Ottawa Rough Riders, Shreveport Pirates, and Ottawa Renegades over three different stints, passed away at the age of 84. How will you remember him?
I mean, all three teams failed very quickly after he bought them. However, I do think that if you look at the comments Joanne Pollock made to Tim Baines of the Ottawa Sun, Gleiberman bought the Rough Riders when the alternative was them folding. So to that, you have to give him credit. Brett Lawther followed up a disastrous Week 11 performance by making all four of his field goal attempts against Toronto. How impressive was that?
Incredible leadership from Lawther, both taking the force of the blame after that terrible game he had and then backing it up by coming out and correcting his mistakes. Kudos to him. Beloved former Saskatchewan Roughriders head coach Ken Miller passed away this week at the age of 82. What did he mean to Rider Nation?
If you want to have an idea, just Google Kerry Joseph 3 Down Nation and read our entire piece on him, or go to YouTube, type in Sports Cage. Kerry Joseph gave me 30 minutes on an NFL game day just to talk about Ken Miller. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers will induct Charles Roberts into the team's Ring of Honor at Princess Auto Stadium. Is he worthy of that selection? I think that's an easy answer.
He absolutely is. Charles Roberts, honestly, I know that he's in the Hall of Fame. He's almost underrated. He was a CFL All-Star 7 years in a row and won three rushing titles at like 160 pounds soaking wet, which for a guy who smoked and didn't exercise is an almost unhuman feat. Stanley Bryant and Jalen Acklin were both released from hospital the morning after being taken off the field by ambulance in their respective games. How much of a relief is that?
It's a huge relief. And let me just say this. No more ambulances, guys. We've had too many the last 2 weeks. No more for the rest of the season. Let's keep everybody safe out there. The Hamilton Tiger Cats have hired Rich Massaro as a player personnel consultant following a 2-year stint at the University at Buffalo. Is that a good hire?
I like it. The dude loves and respects, most importantly, the Canadian Football League. The Montreal Alouettes have signed Austin Mack to a four-year contract extension, tying him to the team through 2028. Is that a prudent move?
I think it's a wild move. 4 years? That's a long time to be committed to a team. But obviously, Mack has made no secret of how much he loves Montreal. Clearly, Montreal loves him back. The Calgary Stampeders have signed veteran returner Chandler Worthy. Do you think he could be productive in Cowtown?
Yes, I think he'll be a massive upgrade over what they've been dealing with this season in Cowtown. He could take one back down the stretch. Week 12 in the CFL averaged English language television viewership of 585,000, the highest of the season thus far. Dunk, why do you think that was?
The Edmonton Oilers are no longer making a Stanley Cup run. The Olympics are over. The Blue Jays suck. So for the month of August, at least in these last couple of weeks, the CFL had the entire sports calendar to themselves. That's about to change, but I think we could see that week topped with the ratings on Labor Day. But keep it tuned to 3downnation.com to find out.
We thank you, as always, for listening to the 3 Down Nation podcast. Enjoy Labor Day weekend. We'll see you next week.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual, we're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.